Brian Tallarico joins us now, the editor at RogerEbert.com. Okay, that's not why we called, but you're going to be part of this now. You ready, Brian?
Oh, I'm so ready.
Okay, but where I think the conversation is especially germane is when a whole series drops. I think that's what Griffin's concern was. So it's
right.
It's like, well, I could watch every episode of this season of Stranger Things and know about it, you know, within a day how that series ends, and yet it might take people weeks to process the
right.
whole thing. So what are the rules of engagement there?
It's hard to say. I mean, I've written a couple pieces recently for the New York Times that go deep into the end of this season. And at the top, in all italics, we have, hey, people, spoilers, pay attention. And I still just had somebody yell at me on Twitter for spoiling things.
I guess, okay, so what's a journalist to do? Maybe, I mean, I guess it's your responsibility to write about what you're writing about
right.
for the people that have watched it. And it's incumbent
right.
upon the reader to exit that conversation, huh?
I think so. And I think, especially something like this, like you said, Netflix just released numbers that 100 million people have already watched it. So for those 100 million people, there can be a conversation about what the team behind the show accomplished from first episode to last that the other people can join in on later. For pre-air stuff, like I ran a review 3 days before it aired, and Netflix was very specific about what we could and could not say.
Oh, really?
We couldn't reveal nearly anything pre-air. They didn't, I mean, I'll drop things that are at the very beginning. We couldn't use the word Russian. We couldn't use, like, they didn't want, like, hardly anything mentioned pre-air. But once it's on, there is kind of like a, at a certain point, 100 million people want to discuss everything about it. You know what I mean? They don't want to discuss just the first episode or
right,
the fact that there are Russians under the mall.
If I've watched the series, what are we talking about here? Let's talk about the series, which includes the
right.
end. Don't worry, we're not
right.
about to in this conversation, but I
no.
appreciate how complicated that is. By the way, 100
yes.
million people, I don't know if I believe that. That would be 1 in 3 Americans.
I don't believe it either. Netflix's numbers have always come with a big grain of salt because there's no oversight to them. I mean, and no one's really quite sure what that means. Does that mean someone, like, autoplayed part of an episode and that counts as one of the people, you know what I mean, where
yeah.
it, like, rolls into the next episode? So it's always been a little vague. And they said, like, something like, more than that, watch the last Adam Sandler movie, to which we all went, no, that can't be true. So I don't know if I believe it either. Their numbers are a little inflated. But I'm sure a lot of people watched it based on responses I'm getting. And a lot of people, I think, watched all 8 hours in a row on the 4th of July. I know a ton of people who were ready to talk about the end before the day was over that it had first premiered. So
we watched at my house the first 2 seasons, and in season 3, everything but the last episode. We got last night, and we were kind of tired. It's pretty
mm-hmm.
late now, and we really wanted to watch it, but we wanted to watch it, like, fresh. We didn't
mm-hmm.
want to just plow through the damn thing, so
right.
we'll probably watch it, you know, fully engaged. You know, we'll get our blankie out. The dog will be in between us. We'll be zoned in on that last episode.
Okay.
Whatever. Why is it such a good series? Why all the buzz about this show?
Nostalgia is big right now. I mean, the 80s and a little bit of the 90s, but definitely the 80s. The generation that grew up with Steven Spielberg and John Carpenter and George Romero loves revisiting that era. And this show, created by the Duffer Brothers, knows how to mine that vein of nostalgia. The fact that we still watch Ghostbusters and Back to the Future, and they can weave it into a new plot line, make it feel fresh again. I think people love that kind of thing. It's wildly entertaining, especially this season. I'm very big on this season. I think it's their tightest season in terms of narrative. They waste almost no time. It's like 2 days of action, eight episodes.
This thing moves
yeah.
right along.
It flies, whereas in some past seasons, kind of had a little an episode here or there that where you felt like it sagged a little bit. There's zero sag this season. And the way it's structured in terms of getting all the characters around and back and focusing on different angles of the same mystery, I just think it's a really smart season of television. So I think it's good. I think that's attracting people.
Brian Tallarico is the editor at RogerEbert.com, who's been writing about Stranger Things. I've described it, I guess everybody has, right, as E.T. meets, what does it meet in this case, Brian?
There's a lot of Stephen King in there. There was certainly it. The first
X-Files, maybe?
Yeah, a little. Yeah, well, the Stephen King books of the 80s are all over it. I mean, there's some Christine with the cars, there's it. So there's two Stevens is what I always say. It's King and Spielberg, primarily.
Yeah.
If you know your Stevens, you'll enjoy it.
You know,
and this year there's some John Carpenter and George Romero, too.
I tweeted last night that I've now I'm making a list of ways I don't want to go based on television and movie viewing. And,
sure.
And the one that always reigned supreme for me was any of the aliens from the Alien series, right? Those little critters. I mean, that was just awful. Think about how creeped out you were by those things. You do not want to go that way. Number three on my list, but that's now number two. Number three on my list is the critters from The Mist, the whatever the hell was behind that foggy thing. That looked to me like a very unpleasant way to go. But I'll tell you what, that blob monster, the Flayer from Stranger Things, the effects on that are, you do not want to die that way.
No. I mean, especially the way people are being impacted and possessed, for lack of a better word. Again, no spoilers. Right. That's like episode one. No spoilers, people.
Oh, did I just
the way people
something?
Are being possessed. No. I'm just warning our listeners that we're not giving a lot away. But there's a really ugly way for townspeople who are, let's say, possessed by the player this season. Yeah.
Well, what's the worst way for you to go based on, and you can have the shark from Jaws, you can have whatever, you can go through the wood chipper if you want in Fargo. What's the worst way?
You brought it up, but it's not just getting attacked by them. It's John Hurt in Alien, where you're just having dinner, you feel like you're better, and then it comes right out of your chest.
That's tough.
Yeah, that's a bad one. And what's so great about that scene is the panic on his face and everyone else's. And that's probably one of the most famous film deaths of all time, and not a good way to go.
It's like, oh, this isn't just bad shrimp. I think an alien is going to come out of my stomach now.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, fair enough. We don't need to dwell on that. But there's also some controversy of late that Netflix has been asked to dial back the smoking scenes in Stranger Things. Is that right?
Yeah. I don't know how much they were asked. I mean, they were pressured a little bit, but they kind of just came out and said, we're going to do this. What's going kind of underreported is that most of the studios have done this for years. Right around the turn of the decade, there was a big Surgeon General report that said that PG-13 and R movies were influencing smoking numbers among teenagers. And so all of the studios, Paramount, Sony, especially Disney, have internal memos and rules that you can't allow smoking in films aimed at teenagers or children, which is why we barely see it anymore. I mean, it's a shock to see a character smoke in a non-period film in a movie or TV show.
In a non-period film, but fair enough. And I'm comfortable with that. I also think it's relatively reflective. Fewer people smoke now than used to. It's seen as less glamorous, maybe even influential. But if you're going to remake West Side Story, don't they need to be smoking in that?
That's a good question, because they are remaking West Side Story. They probably should be, and they probably won't be, is what I'll say. Given today's climate, I don't think we'll see it.
Would they take the word cigarette out of that? So when you're a jet all the way from your first milkshake to your last time.
from your first
pirouette. The dancers, first pirouette.
Your first jewel, your first jewel. Jewel pod.
That's a good question. I mean, Spielberg has the power to kind of do whatever he wants, but I think, wouldn't we all be a little surprised to see a cigarette even in a movie like that? I mean, I have to admit, when Hopper smoked in Stranger Things, I thought of it. I thought, you don't see that anymore.
Well, I think Hopper smoking in Stranger Things, it's a period piece. They were smoking in the middle 80s, but I think it's almost gratuitous. Like, okay, we know he's the no rules guy. He's the rough and tumble cop, and he smokes, damn it. But my God, he's smoking a lot.
Yeah, I think they're reflecting the pop culture, too, though. Believe it or not, I watched Ghostbusters with my boys for the first time the other day, and they all smoke. They smoke, like, in the Ghostbusters room. They smoke when they're talking.
Wait, the Ghostbusters smoke? I don't remember them smoking.
A couple
the characters
of them did.
Do? Really?
Bill Murray does, and Dan Aykroyd does, I think. Maybe Harold. Two of them did at one scene, and I was like, look at that. You don't see that much. I mean, we didn't notice it back then, and we don't care. That Bill is definitely smoking outside the library, and I think Dan is smoking later in the station.
And if they were going to remake that, nothing would be lost. If they were making that movie for the first time now, Ghostbusters, and they didn't smoke, nothing is lost there. But I think there's certain context where smoking is relevant, or it's part of the character development.
Sure, and we'll still see it in period stuff. I just feel like, but most of that period stuff, like a biopic or something like that, isn't aimed at teens. I think, like, Netflix is saying we're not going to do this at PG-13 or M-14 or whatever they call it on TV stuff, but if they do something like Triple Frontier, that Ben Affleck movie that's aimed at, that would be R-rated if it was in theaters, I think they'll still do it. And to be honest, as someone with three boys, I'm okay with that. Like, I'm okay with a shift away from things that my kids are going to see not having as much smoking. Although, to be honest, it allows me to talk to them about it, because otherwise they don't know it exists.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Okay, but I also think it's an interesting road you go down. Like, okay, I get it. That makes sense. But there's either a certain hypocrisy or you've set yourself up for something that maybe you don't want to do. Hollywood or Netflix. Let's pick it up here in just a minute. We're talking to Brian Tellerico. He's the editor at RogerEbert.com. Brian Tellerico from RogerEbert.com is on a phone line with us. By the way, Brian is also a very good follow on Twitter, Brian_Tellerico, T-A-L-L, Tellerico. He writes about movies and TV and sports and his kids and how good it is to sometimes get away from them. Stuff like that. Am I right, Brian?
Yes, and how much I love them.
And how much you love them. I don't mean to say that you don't. By the way, John, Russians under the Mall. Thanks, Brian. No, we didn't spoil anything.
Nothing.
Netflix international, hence 100 million people could have seen that show already?
Yes.
I've seen it in Spanish, Japanese. Yeah. It's funny, though, isn't it? I mean, I'm naive enough to think that major corporations do or do want to tell the truth. God, you should see Griffin's face right now. I don't think they will lie. It's hard to believe that this quickly 100 million people have seen Stranger Things. So there you are.
How honest do you think the movie studios would be if there was no oversight in them telling us how much a movie made every weekend? It's just that kind of thing that I'm like, okay,
yeah, right.
Maybe.
We were talking about the blobby monster called the Flayer in Stranger Things, and I said that's the worst way to go I can remember, but my listeners are saying this. Wood Chipper in Fargo.
Yeah, sure.
Game of Thrones burning alive.
Yes.
The smoke monster from Lost was scary at first, but now it's kind of tame.
Right.
619 says Damien movies, attacked by Raven, eyes pecked out, then hit by a semi. Hello.
Yes.
Not a good way. And the list goes on, I guess. What a fun Facebook post. We're asking you what the most memorable way is that you don't want to go.
Yeah.
But by the way, so you were talking to us a little bit about how maybe you wouldn't mind it if studios and Netflix edited out or did not produce any more smoking scenes or characters that smoke so much, right?
Stuff that's aimed at young viewers, which Stranger Things undeniably is. Again, there was a report right around the turn of the decade where the Surgeon General came out and said, we have some pretty solid evidence that PG-13 smoking encourages smoking among teenagers. And if that's what's funny is I'm not one of those people who thinks like a lot of violence in movies contributes to violence in society. But I'm also one of those people who thinks extreme violence isn't always necessary to the story. So if smoking isn't necessary to the story, I mean, you and I grew up in a time when there was smoking in movies that didn't really need it. It was used to help make characters look cool. You know what I mean? Or it was used as a crutch, as an acting crutch. Tons of actors used it as an acting crutch for years. So if you can make a case that something needs it, like if we're going to make a movie about a World War II movie where soldiers smoked in the field, then that's fine. Or a war movie, I get it. But if you're going to make something with teenagers, I mean, wouldn't you be shocked to see a movie with teenagers smoking nowadays? You wouldn't see it. And I feel like that's okay. I feel like that's what Netflix is doing, and people are surprised, but I don't see that big a deal about it, to be honest.
Yeah, I think that's what makes West Side Story, the Steven Spielberg remake, such an interesting test case for this, because...
Right.
You could say it's not, you know, vital to the story, but it kind of is, too. I mean, it's a period piece.
I would argue it is. Because of the period it's reflected.
The period and the antisocial behavior that those guys engage in.
But if you were making West Side Story today, antisocial characters, gang members in the city or suburbs who are going to duel it out, and these aren't your honor students we're talking about here. So yeah, they would be smoking today too.
Again, but is that something aimed at a kid necessarily? Like there will be tons of smoking in R-rated movies and R-rated shows on Netflix forever. In other words, it's the delineation between something that's aimed at 11-year-olds and something that's aimed at older. And I guess I would question why you would, like, you wouldn't need someone to smoke cigarettes in a show. I'm trying to think of a show that's definitely aimed at 11-year-olds other than Stranger Things, but you know what I'm getting at. Like, the shows that are targeting younger viewers, you wouldn't need that. They were certainly old enough by the end. It looked like they're old enough to smoke.
And there were some tough characters in Harry Potter, but they're not smoking cigarettes there behind the curtains, are they? Do we see that in any of the Harry Griffin's now looking to the sky, trying to recollect any smoking scenes in the Harry Potter series?
No, I'm just coming up with Gandalf, but that's in Lord of the Rings. he does a lot of smoking.
All right, but we've got to go. But I mean, but are you guys both going down the slippery slope then? Then we shouldn't have alcohol depicted or premarital sex or hamburgers for that matter. It's sort of like when government
You very rarely have alcohol. I don't think there's much alcohol in the MCU unless it does a major character flaw, like Tony Stark. Like, you don't have these kind of vices in PG-13 films or TV shows in general. I think Netflix, I guess what I would conclude with is that Netflix came out and said, we're going to do something, but almost everyone is already doing. Do you know what I mean? Aimed at PG-13 audiences don't include smoking and drinking. So, I mean, maybe they wanted to get credit for being ahead of the curve a little bit, but I feel like almost all the studios and TV networks do this anyway.
That's an interesting point. Brian Tallarico is the editor at RogerEbert.com. Do you check out that site? Very user-friendly, very easy to sort of catch views and reviews. And
Thanks.
He's a good follow on Twitter as well. That's Brian_Tallarico. Follow him on Twitter. Okay, Brian.
Thank you, John.
Always thanks for your time today.
Yeah, take care.